This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Nearly 10 million hogs live in the counties nestled between the greater Raleigh-Durham metropolitan area and the beaches of coastal North Carolina. But unlike the one hog that many city dwellers know, most of them do not live on a small farm with a spider named Charlotte protecting them from the slaughterhouse. No, Wilbur is the stuff of fiction. In reality, hog farming is a billion-dollar factory-style business in North Carolina. Hogs live in giant indoor pens with slatted concrete floors. Their waste drops through the slats into a pit where it is periodically washed out into a large open-air sinkhole known as the Hog Lagoon. How these pools of manure are managed has become a vexing problem for environmentalists, farmers, and politicians in North Carolina. And joining me now to tell us more about it is Wade Rollins. He's an environmental reporter with the News and Observer newspaper in Raleigh. Wade, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you.
Back in 95, the NNO did a series about big pork, and it won a Pulitzer. And there were some, what were some of the environmental concerns raised in that series?
Well, that series was prescient in its the concerns it raised about the potential pollution to our waterways that hog farms posed. And within a few months after that series was published, there was a major spill from the Ocean View Farm in Onslow County. It's in June of 95. It spilled 25 million gallons of hog waste into the New River. There were other spills after that, but that sort of focused the attention on the problem.
Well, hog waste is organic anyway. What's the problem when it spills into the rivers?
Well, it changes the biology of the rivers, and it causes massive fish kills. The waterways just aren't they can't handle that much waste and without some form of treatment before it reaches the water.
Now, the series also talked about leakage from those lagoons, so they didn't have to wait for a spill or for Hurricane Floyd to wash all that stuff out. The fact is, some tests were showing that some of the stuff, the manure, was leaking from these lagoons and leaching into the soil and getting into the waterways.
Yeah, that's also true, moving into the groundwater. The larger problem, as we've seen since then, has been the lagoons, the dikes on the lagoons breaking during periods of heavy rain, filling up to the top and then just washing over the top and washing out these earthen dams and causing surface water contamination.
So here we are, 11 years later. How have those concerns been addressed?
Well, there have been a number of steps taken. The problems are still out there. The state, in the late 90s, passed a moratorium on the construction or expansion of hog farms. So there haven't been any new hog farms built in the state since then. There are about 2,600 hog farms in the state, and most of those, as you said earlier, are concentrated between the Triangle area and the coast. In 2000, the then Attorney General and now Governor Mike Easley signed an agreement with the two largest pork producers, Smithfield Foods and Premium Standard Farms, to try to find some new treatment technologies to replace the hog lagoons. And since then, researchers at NC State have been looking at a variety of innovative technologies. Now, the agreement called for technologies that would be environmentally superior and economically feasible before the hog farms would have to convert to new treatment methods. Mm-hmm. The researchers have found several methods that they deem to be environmentally superior, in that they do a better job of treating the waste. But to date, the cost of those methods are 2 to 5 times as much as the as the Hog Lagoon method. So they haven't passed the economically feasible threshold.
Well, who determines that threshold, and how is it determined?
Well, it's a contentious issue. It's determined by there was a researcher at NC State named Mike Williams who oversaw the research all the research which was funded by these hog farms as part of this agreement, these large pork producers. And he appointed a panel of economists to try to come up with a good definition of economically feasible. And that became a contentious issue and one that the sort of oversight panel never quite came to terms with. The hog farmers who sat on the panel felt like any method that cost them money was not economically feasible, cost them additional money, while the majority of the panel felt like a method could still be economically feasible but incur some additional cost for hog operations.
So I guess it really comes down to who bears the cost if you had to put these new technologies in place. And maybe at this point we can talk a little bit about how hog farms are structured, who are the producers, and how they're integrated with larger corporations that are involved in processing. So maybe you can start there and tell us how hog production works, and then who would bear the cost of the new technologies.
The way hog production works is the large corporate the large corporations own the pigs, and in some cases they own the farms as well. But in many cases, they contract with private farmers to raise their pigs for them and get them to a certain, get them ready to be sent to the slaughterhouse. The agreement required that the corporate hog farms would bear the cost for conversion to better treatment methods. Mm-hmm. But to date, they haven't gotten close in terms of the cost as far as the NC State researchers were concerned.
And what are these costs? Give us an idea what it costs to build a hog containment or a lagoon now and what these new technologies might cost.
I don't have a good sense of the dollar cost for the new technologies. The best way I've had it explained to me by Mike Williams is that they're anywhere from 2 to 5 times as costly as the current technologies.
So how would that affect the competitiveness? North Carolina right now is a second leading hog-producing state in the country next to Iowa. What would that mean in terms of North Carolina's competitiveness?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Mm. As with many of these things, I was speaking with Bart Ellis, who was a vice president at Smithfield Foods, and who is a member of the NC State Advisory Committee, and he said that was the core question, the competitiveness with other states. And he said that this conversion would cause the number of hog operations in the state to shrink in size, and Ellis said, in my mind at least, an economically unfeasible situation for the industry. There were other members of that project advisory committee who said that you could still be economically feasible with some reduction in the size of the hog population in the state.
Well, this whole story really provides an object lesson in some of the basics in economics. And so joining our conversation now are Caroline Gentry and Natalie Ernst. They're both freshmen at UNC Chapel Hill, and they're finishing up an entry-level economics course taught by Professor Patrick Conway. In their Econ 51 course, the focus is not on the great schools of economic theory, but on real-life economic issues like this one facing ordinary North Carolinians. Natalie, Caroline, welcome to the program.
Hi.
It's nice to have you here. You worked with a group of students who studied hog farming and lagoon management. Caroline, let me start with you. You're from outside Winston-Salem.
Right.
And so how much did you know about hog lagoons going in?
Not very much at all. I knew that it was a controversial issue of North Carolina, but that's basically all I knew. I didn't know anything about how the hog farm actually worked or anything with the lagoon system.
But. And how did you understand the issue going in, just from reading the papers and then listening
right,
to public
right,
radio?
Just from reading the papers. Some of my family is farmers. They're mainly with crops, but so I had heard of the issue just right. through that, but.
Natalie, you grew up on the West Coast. What was your initial reaction to studying hog waste in rural North Carolina, of all things?
Well, I definitely did not expect to find that in a econ class, but I really had no knowledge of the issue before this class. I went in there really knowing nothing about hog farming, especially not knowing anything about the political or economic implications of the industry.
And just briefly sort of describe how you understand or how you now see the world of economics fitting into what may seem like a simply an environmental issue.
Well, it definitely has a lot of implications in the economic world. I think it's helped me to understand that there's an economic side to everything. And, you know, we've looked at externalities, free rider problems, all these terms in economics that I had no idea could apply to hog farming.
Tell us, Wade Rollins, let me ask you about those so-called externalities. That's something that economists sometimes call social costs. And when we get into the cost effectiveness or the feasibility, the cost of economic or environmental catastrophe is borne by the public at large. That is a kind of socialized cost that everybody pays. And so when the legislature takes a look at this and they say, well, we're going to have to come up with a way to prevent environmental disaster, but we're going to put the entire burden on the producers, who are, by the way, producing the potential disaster. Do they talk about spreading out the risk among the beneficiaries, which would be the public at large?
Well, there has been some discussion in the last legislative session. There was a piece of legislation introduced that was supported by the environmental community that would have provided $10 million to begin the conversion process to try some of these innovative technologies on a half dozen farms, where the totally voluntary process for the farmers who were interested in doing this. And some farmers are open to that idea. And this would have been public money that mm-hmm. would have been yeah. used to begin that conversion process and show that. That these methods will work and can be done without breaking the farmers.
Caroline, you went to visit a hog farm owned by Randy Smith. First of all, describe it for us.
Well, we went to see the hog barn and the hog lagoons located right behind it. The hog lagoon was about an acre. It had a purplish tint to it, which I did not expect that, but. He just told us a lot about, he showed us how the spray field technology sort of worked, which is what they use now to get rid of some of the hog waste.
And what's that all about, spray field technology?
They pump the waste out of the lagoon and spray it over the fields with their crops. I think they have to have a certain, for regulation, they have to have a certain amount of acres for each. I don't know how they measure if it's in gallons or what.
Right, but they want it proportional so that you're not dumping too much of that stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And he just talked about that and how the new technology, how he doesn't see it that for him, he's a small hog farmer and he doesn't see it that would be economically feasible for him. For him, like the cost would be too much to bear to stay in business.
Natalie, did you come away? Tell us a little bit about your experience and what your part of this project was.
Well, my research paper focused on just the economic feasibility of implementing the new technologies. And coming away from it, I really saw the perspective of the farmer. It's just for each farmer to implement any kind of new technology, it's just astronomical. And so I came away with it just really seeing the side of the farmer and realizing that something has to be done to ease the burden of the costs of new technologies before they can expect farmers to implement that.
Caroline, what were your expectations going into the project?
Really, I did not know what to expect at all. Going into it, I didn't know much about it. I wasn't thrilled that I had to study hog farms, but once going to visit the hog farm, I got more into it, I guess.
Do you begin to see, I'm going to put this question to both of you, okay. and I'll start with you, Caroline, this whole question of the risk that a society takes, the
right.
stuff we all have to, the burden we bear for environmental degradation, and the fact that it costs us something, and then there are these people who are trying to produce something, and they're creating that environmental trouble, whatever it is. Is that something that you understood to be the way things work or the central issue in some of these environmental and political struggles?
I went into it thinking that this was totally an environmental issue that, I mean, I was totally for the environment, thinking that the hog farms are just polluting our water, just the odor from the hog farms and all this. But once going to the hog farm to see it and then talk to Randy Smith, I realized that, first of all, when I went, there was not a terrible odor. It was a very clean place, and I saw that. To me, it didn't appear to have a huge environmental impact, like just from seeing that right there. And so I became more in agreement with the farmer from that. And so,
Natalie, how about you? Did your ideas about this change as a result of doing the research?
Well, I, going into it, didn't even realize that there was a conflict between the environmental side and the farming side. And so I can't say that I took a side because I didn't even know the conflict existed. But coming out of it and studying the economic feasibility for the farmers, I definitely see the farmer's side. Although, you know, the environmentalists have a very valid point as well.
Did you find yourself sort of struggling with how do we solve this? We can't really put the whole burden on them. On the other hand, we really can't be killing our rivers if that's going to happen.
Exactly. And I think that's the problem. Wade mentioned the Smithfield Agreement in 2000, where they were given the job of coming up with economically feasible technology. And as we saw, they couldn't really find anything that the farmers could agree to implement. So,
Wade Rollins, tell us a little bit more about where we are with regard to that agreement. Most of the provisions have expired, have they not?
Yes. There is still some ongoing research. Some of the methods that were deemed to be environmentally superior received some additional funding for the research projects to see if the cost of those methods could be brought down and made more competitive. We have a moratorium in effect now, and that expires in September of 2007. So the issue is likely to be discussed by the next legislature.
And some of those new technologies did allow for selling some of the byproducts of this, didn't they? Was there any economic benefit in that?
There was. You have to create markets for those products, and one of the things that Mike Williams, who oversaw the whole research project, stressed was the need to create viable markets for these products. I mean, some of the products that these are things like soil additives and fertilizer, which, you know, the Department of Transportation is using some of the hog manure, the treated hog manure, as fertilizer on the roadside plantings along the highways that we see, the flowers.
All right. And you think the legislature may take this up this session?
Well, the moratorium is going to expire, so they're going to have to talk about whether to extend the moratorium, and I'm sure there'll be pressure again from the environmental community to provide some funding to try to implement some of these technologies.
Wade, thanks very much for being with us. Wade Rollins, reporter for the News and Observer. Caroline Gentry and Natalie Ernst, freshman at UNC Chapel Hill, thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Just ahead, a trip to Mary Scroggs Elementary School on the state of things. Stay with us.